Listener Production.
Welcome to the Weekend Briefing. I'm Antoinette Latouf. So there is a lot to be stressed about in life and around the world at the moment. I probably don't need to tell you that, and I get it. Many of us are struggling. And as cliche as it sounds, that laughter is the best medicine. And I get it, even saying it, I sound like an Etsy t-shirt slogan, but it truly is. So a few months ago, one of my sisters was going through a really rough patch. And there was this comedian whose reels I just kept seeing on socials, and he always made me laugh. His name is Michael Shafar, and I decided to gather the sisters, buy tickets, and go and see him. And we had the best night. We still send each other messages about his gags, and I'm delighted to introduce Michael Shafar to you. He has a new show, he's currently touring, and he's probably the only person who can make fun of being Jewish, make fun of cancer, make fun of his genitals, all in the same breath, and not only get away with it, but have the room in hysterics. Later in the show, we'll be bringing you the weekend list. It's where my wonderful producer, Helen Smith, and I, we recommend what to watch and see and do and eat and listen to and everything in between. So stick around for that. But first, here is my chat with the very funny, very interesting Michael Shafar. Michael Shafar, welcome to the Weekend Briefing.
Thanks for having me on.
Look, I want to dive straight in. And by that, I mean to your underpants and talk about your testicles.
Yeah.
Because you only have one of them, and you love to talk about it on stage.
I do love to talk about it. If you go to my OnlyFans, you'll also see the pictures. So please direct everyone to the OF page. Yeah, let's talk about it. It's also, you know, we're recording this in April, so this is currently Testicular Cancer Awareness Month. So yeah, I kind of am working with Movember as well this month to kind of raise awareness, help men check the testicles, make sure that they're on top of their health, that kind of stuff.
So talk me through what happened with you and your health.
Yeah, so I got diagnosed with testicular cancer. This was like towards the end of 2017. And when I got diagnosed, it was kind of late stage. It wasn't great. So it kind of had spread throughout my body. It was in like my lungs. It wasn't ideal. So yeah, we kind of had to do, I lost my right testicle. We got rid of that. And then we just started doing like chemo straight away. And yeah, I've had to do a lot of surgery, a lot of chemo over a few years. But fortunately, things are looking good now, which is nice. But it was a touch and go there for a bit.
Oh, I'm so glad that not only did you make it through, but you made it through to then make fun of it and raise awareness at the same time.
That's true. And, you know, of the cancers, it is the funniest, I think, of the cancers. So if you're a comedian, you're going to get a cancer. I would say go for ball cancer. That is the best one to get.
I love that. But your health is all good now?
Yeah, things are great now. Things are great now. It's nice to just be able to, just have a normal life.
Fabulous. Okay, well, let's zoom out of your private parts now and find out more about you. Where did you grow up? Tell us about your family.
Yeah, I grew up, I'm not sure if anyone listening is from Melbourne, but I grew up on the main streets of East St. Kilda. Very, very, very rough neighbourhood. A lot of Hasidic Jewish people roaming around the streets. When you go for a run, they would stop you and check if you've done your prayers for the day. And honestly, I'd rather be stabbed and robbed, to be honest. It was very, very confronting. But a real rough area of the country. So yeah, grew up in East St. Kilda with my parents, and have an older brother, older sister. And yeah, nothing, like I had a very normal kind of nice childhood. I don't have any childhood traumas to dump on the podcast. I'm sorry. I just had a normal, easy time. Everyone's like, what was your hardship growing up? Oh, it was fine. It was pretty chill. It was great.
Yeah, I mean, your only hardship is wishing you were stabbed.
Yeah, exactly. My hardship is wishing that I had a harder childhood. It was it was far too easy. I remember you go for a run around my area, and all these like religious Jewish people would stop you and being like, you know, have you done the prayers for today? It would be like a holiday. They'd stop, and I'm like, mate, I'm about to hit a PB, and you're pulling me up on the Orang Road to ask me if I've put on my tefillin today. It was it was a very, very interesting place to grow up.
And your Jewishness is is also a big part of your act. Mm. How do you balance? I mean, I guess it's always easier when you hail from that community to self-deprecate, but how do you balance, you know, poking fun at something while still being endearing?
Yeah, I mean, I love talking about my Jewishness. I didn't really realize that I didn't realize how Jewish I was until I started doing stand-up, because I realized I was kind of like the only Jewish comedian that I knew on the circuit. And also, I didn't realize that most people are not Jewish. That sounds ridiculous, but like, I grew up like in this Jewish bubble. Like, I went to, you know, Jewish community, went to a Jewish school, played football for like the local Jewish football club. So then kind of like getting into comedy, all of a sudden, you know, everyone was just from all these different backgrounds, and the audience is also is so diverse too. So it made me realize that it was kind of a bit of a point of difference. And I think audiences kind of found it interesting just because it's something new. So yeah, I love talking about it. I love making fun of it because it's so silly. And I mean, I love it, but it's also so silly and so dumb. And we do so many silly, dumb things. And I grew up thinking it was all normal. Like, just the idea of not eating bacon is just so dumb to me. It's so silly, but it's a fun thing to play with.
Do you eat bacon now?
Of course I do. I remember, like, but I grew up like...
You do! Naughty Jew.
I'm a bad Jew. I'm a real bad Jew. But that's the thing. Like, I grew up like being terrified of eating bacon. I thought I was going to go to hell. And then I was 18 and me and a couple of mates were like backpacking around Europe. And we saw like, I was like a ham sandwich in like, you know, a train station stop. And we were like, oh, should we have the ham sandwich? We're so naughty. And then we had the ham sandwich and we're like, this is the best thing we've ever had in our lives. We can't believe we've denied this to ourselves for so long. So yeah, I mean, it was just like, as soon as you kind of, I got out of that bubble, I was like, yeah, let's start breaking some rules.
So I came across you on social media. I just saw your reels and I kept liking them and thinking they were quite funny. And I was like, oh, who's Michael? I want to check him out. And so as you would remember, I gathered all of my sisters and we were the very loud people.
Yeah, your sisters came along. That's great. I feel like a couple of them were heckling me as well. Was that right? Do I remember that correctly?
That's correct. And I have a clip from that show.
Okay.
I'm Jewish, by the way. Any Jews in the house? That was the most Jewish way to respond. To be like, yes, I am Jewish, but I don't want everyone to know I am. I'm outside of Bondi, I don't feel safe. Don't be honest.
What's your name, miss?
Julia.
Julia. Okay. We've met Julia, we know each other. Because you used to work for Money Magazine. You interviewed me a few years ago about how to save money. And I was like, I need to not perpetuate any stereotypes when I answer this question.
By the way, I was walking down the street the other day here, and I found a $10 note on the ground. And I was like, this has got to be a trap. I was like, there's got to be like a string attached. Someone's going to come out with a fucking camera and be like, oh, you picking your money, it was just, I thought it was, there was no one else around. True story. I was terrified.
Did you pick it up?
I did pick it up. Yeah.
So that was my sister asking if you picked it up.
Oh, that's so... I'm so glad she asked, because I didn't want to say that I picked it up, but she kind of like led me into it. That's so funny. Oh my gosh. Yeah, I remember that. That's so funny.
Yeah, I think we were like laughing the loudest and honestly talking about it for weeks later. So I guess my recommendation is just to go out and check out a comedian that you've, you know, maybe never seen before or never heard about, because we absolutely loved your show. And I have a sister in Melbourne who's then subsequently gone to see you. So you've got a fan. I've got five sisters. You've got fans amongst the sisters.
I've got to get fans who have come from big families. That's obviously my new marketing strategy. I need to start targeting the Catholics, the Irish Catholics in particular. They've all got like, there's always 12 of them. Do you know what I mean? I've got to start getting market.
My family Catholics and there's seven of us. So that's what you've got to do. That's got to be your social media growth strategy.
Okay.
I saw you pre-October 7 and I hate that everything has become pre-October 7, post-October 7. But I do wonder what the temperature now is about making Jewish jokes. And I don't need to tell you, like, you've always come from a marginalized community, but now it's more politicized that involves war and death. Have you had to rethink some material or pull back on some things? Or do you just lean in because that's what comedy does?
I just lean in. I feel like it's the coward's choice to not talk about it or to change anything you do. So yeah, I kind of operate as if nothing has changed. And look, if the audience wants to be weird about that, then go for it. But yeah, that's kind of like my view is like, I don't want to compromise on what I want to talk about. Yeah, I still want to be you know, raw and, you know, I try to be pretty like brutal on stage and, you know, it's like, okay, if you don't find that funny, that's fine. And yeah, so I think that for me, it hasn't changed really anything. I know that some like Jewish performers have changed a little bit in the sense that they don't want to like maybe identify publicly as Jewish anymore. I don't really feel that way. I don't think if you want to judge me for being Jewish because it's somehow you think I'm connected to some conflict on the other side of the world, then you're
well, yeah,
idiot.
That's on them, not you. Yeah,
like I'm not going to change the way that I perform because some people might have some weird bias or prejudice towards me. So yeah, I don't want to take that into account. And also, like weirdly, I've just had people come up to me after shows more and more now, post October 7, if that's what we're doing. Like, you know, to be and be like, oh hey, I think it's really great that you're still like talking about being Jewish on stage. And
yeah,
and not that I bring up the conflict or anything, but just people will just come up to me and be like, oh, it's cool that you're still like happy to be Jewish publicly because it must be, you know, a weird time. In the same way, it's obviously a weird time to be publicly Muslim or publicly Israeli or publicly Palestinian, whatever it is, you know. So, yeah, I don't want to change and, yeah.
The reality is I suspect some people, based on their social circles, don't have a Jewish person in their life or don't have an Arab person or a Muslim person in their life. And so art and public places, the only way you get that interaction or that perspective.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I'm very much aware that I might be, like when I'm on stage, I might be the only Jewish person that these people like have seen perhaps in a very long time and will for a very long time. So I'm kind of very aware that, not that I want to be, but I am aware that I'm kind of a bit of a representative for the people when I'm on stage. Not that I should be or deserve to be or have been voted in any way. It's just the way it works.
No, and I love that. I love that the representative is a ham-eating, $10 grabbing. He's like, and this is the representation.
This is the person we voted to represent us? It's pathetic. Like, democracy clearly does not work. Yeah, 100%. I mean, it's ridiculous that that's what I am, but I guess that's kind of what I am just from being publicly Jewish. So, yeah, I'm very aware of that responsibility. So I just want to make sure that I kind of represent the people in a way that I think is, you know, fair and kind and justified.
Yeah.
But also, how do you represent like a whole group of people? Like, I mean, Jews are so diverse. We're not a monolith. In the same way, Arabs are not the same and, you know, and Catholics are not the same. Like, there's so much diversity within a group of people just in culturally, just ideologically. I mean, I've got Jewish friends who support Palestinians. I've got Jewish friends who support Israel. And I'm just like, there's no real uniting thing.
In addition to leaning into your Jewishness, because you're the type who's like, well, this is who I am, you also, from your content, you don't mind taking on tricky terrain like trans rights and homophobia, religion, politics. Has kind of social commentary and comedy always been your thing?
Yeah, loved it. I always love it. I hate comedy that's safe. I just can't do it. When I'm watching comedy and I'm always now thinking, okay, but like, yeah, what are you saying? You know, are you taking any risks? Like, what are you saying? And look, I'm sure there have been times where I've like done a bit or said something on stage that I would look back now and be like, oh, that was a bit of like a lame or a safe thing to say. But now that kind of is a huge factor for me when I'm choosing what I want to talk about. And I'm just kind of drawn to talking about that stuff. I really, whenever I see it, I don't know, maybe I've just got a strong sense of social justice or whatever. I think I've always felt that way, which I think is kind of like why I thought maybe I'll be a lawyer, because when you're a lawyer, maybe you can, you know, correct social injustices that you see. I quickly found out that's not really how that profession works at all.
Yes.
But I think in comedy, you can kind of at least talk about it. I don't think I have any real impacts at all in the real world, but you can certainly talk about these injustices and maybe, you know, for some people that can be kind of validating or affirming when they hear their, you know, when they see someone else, you know, actually going into bat for them. So yeah, I mean, I'll make fun of everyone.
I mean, I don't think you should underestimate the impact comedy and that you have, because sometimes you can get people to think about topics or broach topics through humour. Like, people aren't going to walk into a room and be like, right, let's talk trans rights.
If
they laugh, they might learn something. And you break down that kind of barrier. Well, that's the impact I believe that your work has, because it makes me laugh and it makes me think.
Oh, that's very kind of you to say. I mean, yeah, I mean, I hope that's the case. I hope that's the case. Look, at the end of the day, if people just come along, have a laugh and leave and never think about me again, that's also totally fine. And that's, I've still done my job. But yeah, I definitely want to make sure that I just don't want to be taking, I want to be taking risks in comedy. And a lot of the times that requires you to talk about the stuff that people don't want to talk about in polite conversation. So yeah, I'm just attracted. And also I just watch a lot of Fox News. Like I've just got Fox News on in my house constantly.
For all the inspiration.
Yeah. Like I've got Fox News. I've got Sky News. I'm just like jumping between them all the time. Cause I just, and I'm like, I follow, you know, I go on the Herald Sun website. Like I'm always reading like what Andrew Bolt has to say. Just cause these people are like,
you must be thinking, though, like, they're encroaching on our terrain. This is hilarious. Are these people, is this the new face of comedy?
It could be. Well, the beauty of them is that they don't realise how funny they are. At least I don't think they do. So at least if they do it, they're doing it very earnestly. And that's what I think is so hilarious about them. Like, they don't realise how ridiculous they're being. Look, I think a lot of the time they're just performing as well. Like they're all, I think that, you know, a lot of these like right-wing pundits are also just literally performing for their own audience, for their own base and just trying to, you know, keep those people happy. So I think they're also performers, but you know, they say the most outrageous things. So I've just constantly got it on because I'm like, I just want to hear what they're saying so I can make fun of it in my next show.
Yeah. Another thing that happens if you're in the public and have opinions is get trolled. But what you do is you make content out of the trolling. Talk me through that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I started getting trolled heaps. Like during the lockdown, I would make a lot of stuff making fun of anti-vaxxers, which I still stand by. And I'll just, all the anti-vaxxers, they're just, I don't know, they're very sensitive folk, very, very sensitive people. And if you make a joke about them, they will get in the comments and they'll abuse you and they'll just get very, very angry and say often very, very funny things. And at first I was kind of like hurt by it. I was like, oh my, because it was my first time like getting like real negative feedback on the socials. And then I was like, oh no, these people are just like idiots. Like they're just clinically insane. Like anyone who has ever gone into the comment section on the internet and just offered their opinion, particularly to say something negative, I think like you're a crazy person. Like what are you doing with, like get off your phone, look out the window. Like I kind of feel like they're just kind of like lame and losers and like whatever. So I thought, how can I use them? They've made me upset reading this, but how can I kind of like now make myself happy? And that was just by replying to all of them constantly and screenshotting their responses and putting them on social media. And then people would be like, okay, that's actually pretty funny. So it's, I mean, that was just like my way of, I guess, using their...
A coping mechanism?
That was my coping mechanism.
Well?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think so. Look, if you get that much hatred sent to you, like you have to like find a way to, you know, to kind of make fun of it and use it for something. Otherwise, they're winning. You know what I mean? So if I can take their comment, put it on Instagram and get more people following me off the back of that, then great.
Yeah. Well, I think particularly when times are tough, whether it's lockdowns or at the moment with the conflicts, laughter is so important. And sometimes laughter is a mode of survival. Do you think we underestimate how important laughing is? Because like there's that whole laughter is the best medicine. And we're like, yeah, cool, we get it.
Yeah.
But it really bloody is. Otherwise, like it's sometimes hard to go on or to see those that trolling and continue.
Yeah. Well, what I think is that if your like worldview is based on like the internet, like if you think that everyone on Twitter, if you think like Twitter represents people in the real world, you're so wrong. Like you're so wrong. Because Twitter is a place, and this is for all social media stuff, like social media is a place where the most extreme, fringe, ridiculous, outrageous opinions will get platformed. And so if you're on the internet a lot, you start to think, oh, everyone's insane. And if I go out into the world, this is how everyone is behaving in the real world. And then I think if you go into like a comedy show and we're talking about the stuff that's really controversial or taboo and we're all laughing at it, all of a sudden you're like, it can somewhat restore your faith in society and civilization just to be like, oh, yeah. No, you actually can talk about all these controversial things and we can all laugh about it and have a good time. And I'm sure everyone has different opinions on the topics that I'm talking about. But in this moment, it's actually quite a fun, nice happy vibe. And that's it's also a reminder for me, because sometimes I'll be scrolling on the internet and be like, oh my God, like what are people saying? What are people believing? Why is society like this? But then I realize, oh no. People actually aren't like this. You put them in a room, you get them one-on-one, you get them in a group space, you create a fun vibe. Actually, everything's fine. So
yeah,
I think it's not necessarily that like laughter is the best medicine. I just think that getting everyone in a room and talking about this stuff kind of restores your faith in humanity, yeah, and the fact that we can talk about these things in a very, you know, lighthearted and welcoming and inclusive manner, even if we all disagree.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things I noticed about your show that I haven't actually seen in other shows is that you use visual aids and slides and things like that. Yeah. Is it just me? Maybe I haven't spent enough time on the comedy circuit, but is that something that's not done a huge amount?
I mean, it's not done a huge amount. I think a lot of comedians are doing it more and more though.
Right.
Yeah, I think it can be really helpful. Like if you're doing just, you know, a picture tells 1,000 words. So like if you just want to like show something, it can kind of like hit a punchline much more easily than saying a sentence. I kind of started doing it because I was making like TikTok content, which had jokes and pictures coming up. So it kind of like trained me to start thinking about the visual element to jokes. And then there were a few jokes, or there was some material that I wrote that only ever worked with the visual aid. Otherwise, it just wouldn't work. If you remember the show from last year, I had this bit about how the Queen died at 96.
Queen. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which it was how, and the bit was about how like, okay, the Queen died at 96. They say only the good die young, which means she must have been pretty evil. And then I did the comparison with Hitler, who died at 56. I'm like, okay, well then she was like, you know, like almost twice as bad as Hitler, you know, if you crunch the numbers.
Yeah.
And that bit I tried just saying it, but it didn't really work. People were like, what? Yeah. I don't get what, you know, it just didn't grasp. It was fair enough. It just was a weird idea to kind of like think about. And then when I had the pictures, and I had like a picture of the Queen and a picture of Hitler, and then it was just, she was like 1.7 Hitlers, and I had like 1.7 Hitlers next to the Queen. Mm. All of a sudden it was like, people were like, yeah, we get this kind of straight away.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Yeah, it's almost like it can be a bit of a cheat code using slides and pictures. It allows you kind of like to get away with some material that otherwise wouldn't just work if you said it.
And what can we expect from your new show?
The new show is more dark, more brutal, more savage Ooh. Than anything I've written before, which is great. I love it. I love saying stuff on stage and having the crowd just go, wait, what did he just say?
Yeah.
And then I have to be like, I love saying something that they immediately rebel against and then being like, let me explain. And then I explain my point of view and I explain how I've arrived at this conclusion. And then by the end, they're like, okay, that's actually a pretty good point. So that's what I'm trying to do in this year's show, is giving you opinions that you're going to hate at first, but just let me explain. I should have called the show Let Me Explain, because I have to say that like 12 times during the show.
Love it. And where can people see you?
Well, I'm doing a comedy festival right now in Melbourne, and then I'll probably come back to Australia at some point down the track. So if you head to my Instagram, Facebook, just follow me there, and you'll see when I'll post about it when I'm back in town, maybe later in the year. But yeah, I'm based in London. Okay. So if anyone's listening in London, yeah, definitely follow me on the socials, and I've got shows coming up in London, Edinburgh, all over the place.
Comedian Michael Schaefer. That's Schaefer spelled S-H-A-F-A-R. You can follow him on socials and check out details for his show at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. So if you're wondering what to do with yourself this weekend, fear not, we have you covered. That is Helen Smith and I with the weekend list, where we're going to recommend what to consume, what to do with your eyes and your ears and your body, and how to have fun. Helen Smith, what are your recommendations this week?
Well, my first recommendation, the office, we got given these portable blenders, like a smoothie blender.
Oh, okay.
And I was like,
battery operated?
Charge, like you charge it with a USB. So they're called these blend jet things. And I've kind of claimed one of them, like, as mine.
Yeah, yeah.
And they are so good because I'm making my pick-me-up, like, afternoon snack, and I do a smoothie. And I can do it, like, at my desk.
Okay. So the good thing about it is that
I can make smoothies at work. Like, I'm obsessed.
Yeah.
I love smoothies, but, like, you're not going to have a smoothie blender in the kitchen, are you?
I mean, you could. What are you going to do, like, blend a smoothie? I don't mean to, like, poo-poo on your... Well, you sound very excited about this. You're going to be, like, blending your ingredients on the bus. Like, I'm just trying to think of the situations.
That's a weird Antoinette.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of the situations in which you'd be like, damn it, I wish I had my portable blender with me right now.
Yeah, this is true.
Like,
I think it's just work.
I love your enthusiasm.
Because it's very handy.
But you could blend at home and then bring it to work. But isn't it more annoying having to bring all of the ingredients?
No.
Sorry, this is your recommendation.
No, because free milk at work.
Mm-hmm.
Tick.
Yep.
And then all I have in my little drawer is some greens powder and I just need like a banana.
Okay.
And if I want, I can... Sometimes I have peanut butter lying around anyway.
Yeah.
So I just put the greens powder and you can put, like, just keep it in your drawer.
Mm-hmm.
And it's so good.
And so who would you recommend this portable blender to?
Anyone who's like, oh my God, I want a sweet treat. I want a snack. But you know what? I've already eaten two sweet treats today in a hot cross bun.
What you can do is you can go to your local grocery store, have your blender, walk through the aisles, just pop things.
I could blend at Woolies. I could get that free fruit for kids and be like, I'm a child. And just blend.
Okay.
It's really good. And like...
You've convinced me.
Yeah, and I've been telling everyone, guys, if you want a snack, like, make this smoothie. It's so good. Anyway, that's what I've been doing because I'm a snacky person. I need like 5 snacks a day minimum. Yes. And this is one of my new snacks and I'm obsessed.
I love that. Okay. Mine is on Apple TV. Mm. It stars Maya Rudolph. She's the comedian from Saturday Night Live. And just everything she does is hilarious. It's called Loot. And it's about a billionaire. She's a billionaire who breaks up with her husband. And this is all in the trailer. I'm not ruining it for you. Yeah. She breaks up with her husband after 20 years. And she has no idea. She's so out of touch with reality because she's got all of this money. Mm. Somehow this woman makes being a clueless, insensitive billionaire freaking hilarious. So she gets a call from a foundation that she does not even know that she has and owns. She owns islands and theme parks she doesn't even know. She's been too busy having champagnes and going to Monaco. And the plot is she gets a call from a very kind of on the ground grassroots not-for-profit that she owns going, we're in trouble. And so she has to go to work every day in kind of a poor part of LA. And here's this billionaire trying to navigate and trying to pretend to care about. Anyway, it is so funny. It is so funny. Usually, like, I'm in the business of hating billionaires, but Maya Rudolph is so funny and so endearing. And it's the kind of pick-me-up that I like at the end of a busy work day or sort of chaotic life. So Loot, if you've got Apple TV, Maya Rudolph. If you don't have Apple TV, I think you can, like, do a
free... That's what I do.
Yeah, do a free trial.
Just put a different email in.
Yeah. You know? Do what you need to do. It is good. It's good for a laugh.
Mm. I'd love to see real billionaires do that. That I would watch that. Like, chuck a reality show with all the real billionaires. Come use my blender. Like, see what the real people do.
Yeah, right. Yeah, go to Coles, get your groceries.
Go to Coles.
Yeah.
Scam the free fruit. Like, come on.
Yeah, love that.
So my second recommendation is also a TV show. It's called Kimmy Schmidt. Now, it's been around for a while. I remember I probably watched this first in 2019. But it's come back into my life. It's the nostalgia watching.
Yeah, right.
And Claire, our investigative editor, she's also obsessed. But Kimmy Schmidt is a weird humor show. It's about these girls who were, it's Tina Fey. Tina Fey is involved.
Oh, I love Tina Fey.
Tina Fey comedy.
I love Tina Fey.
Obsessed. Yeah. So it's about these girls who were actually kidnapped in a bunker. They're released and now they're in the real world. They're called the Mole Women.
Mm-hmm.
And they're playing out their real world. And Kimmy, who's the star, now lives in New York and we follow her life and it's amazing.
Okay.
My favorite character is Titus Andromedos.
Okay.
He's like this gay, queer queen.
Oh, I have seen this.
So good.
I have seen this.
It's so good. Yeah, and it's just weird and wacky and you're
so
like,
weird.
What is going on?
Yeah, yeah.
But I'm just like, this is the best thing in my life.
Yep. And as we've just heard, we need more laughter and more comedy in our life. So yeah, Loot. And what was your one called?
Kimmy Schmidt.
Kimmy
Schmidt.
The
Unbreakable Kimmy Schmidt. And
there
it's
you
like,
are.
Unbreakable. It's so good.
Fabulous. Love that. Okay. My final one is going to sound a little bit simple, but I don't think enough people do it. And that is, please don't laugh. Sleep a lot. And also, I know, wow, mind blown. And also charge your phone in another room. And I know there might be some people who are like, I'm an insomniac or I have a 7-month-old, how dare you tell me to sleep a lot. But if you are able to, I cannot underestimate the benefits of 7 to 8 hours sleep, not looking at your phone for an hour before you go to bed and the first thing you do when you wake up. So I put my phone as far away as possible in the furthest charger in the house, so I'm not next to it. Because we are so used to now being constantly connected to technology, I don't think we remember what it's like for our brains to not be fried before we go to bed and then be overstimulated before the first thing we wake up. So I have been doing this for a whole 3 days. And as a, and as a veteran of this method.
Look, longer than most of us.
Yeah, as a veteran of this method, I can just say, I just wake up feeling less anxious, wake up feeling more refreshed, and anything that life throws at you, if you've had 7 to 8 hours of sleep, I just think you can handle. I know it sounds really simple, but I wonder how many people listening actually get 8 hours of sleep and don't look at their phone the last before they sleep and when they
wake up. Not many.
Yeah, tell us if you do. Tell us if I'm wrong and I'm stating and suggesting and preaching the bleeding obvious. But yeah, that's from me.
I love that one. And the excuse of, but my alarm is on my phone.
You can still hear it.
You can still hear it. And also just, you can go to like Reject Shop and get a $2 alarm clock.
Oh, yeah,
like,
yeah.
That's my other thing.
Well, I find having an alarm quite far away from my bed forces me to get up and not snooze.
Oh, yeah,
snooze.
It does. And not
because
snooze
if you're it. If you've got a rush and get up, then you'll get up and it's much.
I really like that one. I'm going to try this. And another one that I also heard was, if you're really feeling anxious, try and if you can spare 15 minutes to go on a walk without your phone, like get outside, go on a walk for even just 15 minutes without your phone, nothing, and just breathe outside, go on a walk.
Yeah.
Same honestly, things. It's like, oh, it's like a little bit of meditation almost.
Totally.
Yeah.
But they're simple things. Thanks, Helen. And that is it for this week. Thank you so much for being with us and tuning in. It's always a pleasure to keep you company. And if you want more of the Weekend Briefing, you'll get another episode tomorrow with Tom Tilley, but you can find us on the Listener app. You can download the Listener app in the App Store and follow us there. Otherwise, follow or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from. And why not give us a rating and review for this fabulous interview with Michael Schaefer. And FYI, you can rate and review every episode. That's it from me. I'll catch you next week, but Tom Tilley will be in your ears tomorrow.